Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We're here to break down the Blue Jays' top 10 prospects today. And to do that, we are joined by the esteemed Ben Badler. Ben has done the Blue Jays system for a while now. He started doing them when they were kind of on the rise with some of these prospects. Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette, Alek Manoah came along as a draft pick. And those guys have now graduated to the major leagues and helped the Blue Jays become a 91-win team. Ben, you've kind of been here from the start, if you will, of this rise of the Blue Jays. They reached back-to-back ALCSs in 2015, 2016, took a step back and really reloaded. And now they're one of the more exciting young teams in the American League. They've added a lot of prominent free agents around that core. George Springer, obviously, before last season. They went out and signed Kevin Gausman this year. Where do you kind of see the Blue Jays organization as a whole? And what do you make of this rise and this climb and how they got here?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most dangerous teams to watch in baseball over the next half decade. I think they had a pretty clear plan in place to build through the farm system and in particular build around their young hitters. And then when the time was right to supplement that homegrown talent with free agent signings that you mentioned, obviously George Springer, Marcus Semien no longer there, but that was a big addition for them. And then using some of those prospects in trades, Austin Martin, Semien Woods-Richardson, sending some of that, what was one of the top five farm systems in baseball. And obviously a lot of that talent has graduated, but they've used some of those players too in trades to help the big league team right now. And I think it's a pretty open window over this, this upcoming five or so years when you have this lineup built around Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette and, Gabriel Moreno now is coming up and Lourdes Gurriel and all these other hitters who are, these guys who are in their 20s still entering the primes of their career. I mean, I don't know how much better Vlad Jr. is going to be compared to what he did in 2021, but I think you have two guys you can plug into the middle of your lineup and be perennial all-star and I think in Vlad's case, perennial MVP candidate. So now the lineup has been in a good spot and the pitching I think is getting better. Obviously graduating Manoah has helped. I think Pearson is a big wild card there, but I think even where maybe a couple of years ago where you were really counting on Nate Pearson to be an anchor of the rotation, even if he doesn't, there's a lot more talent in place there now to carry that rotation, even if he doesn't end up panning out. So I think this is going to be one of the most dangerous teams to watch in the American League over the next few years.
Yeah, over the last three or four years, they've graduated Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez, who they acquired as a prospect. We mentioned Alek Manoah, even guys like Jordan Romano. That's a homegrown player development success story. The free agent signings you talked about, Semien, Springer, Hyunjin Ryu. And another thing the Blue Jays have done that I think has been kind of a credit to them, acquiring some pitchers who were going through some issues, were not their best selves, specifically Robbie Ray and Steven Matz, and got them back into prime form. Robbie Ray became a Cy Young Award winner. Obviously, he left for the Mariners in free agency this year, but they've really done it through all avenues. And then, of course, acquiring Jose Berrios this year was a big addition, signed him to an extension. With all of the graduations and the prospects they've traded to go get a lot of these guys, the farm system has fallen. Again, it's not a problem. It's fallen for the right reasons. How would you assess the state of the farm system right now, just given, again, so many graduations and so many guys moved in trades to help improve the big league club?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably more middle tier right now, where before you had a lot more depth in the system and more volume of, top 100 guys. I think at one point they had maybe seven or even eight guys who were top 100 prospects. Right now you don't have that. Again, in part because those guys were Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette and Manoah and Alejandro Kirk and these guys who've graduated or like we talked about since been traded for Jose Berrios with Martin and Woods Richardson. But you know, you still have an impact guy at the top in Gabriel Moreno. I think there's an argument he's, after Adley Rutschman, the best catching prospect in baseball. And I think that's saying something right now, because I think that catching in the minors right now is really, really at a high level right now. But I think he's comfortably a top 20 overall prospect in baseball. You could argue him being in the top 10 too. So it's still strong at the top. There's, you know, a couple other guys I could see being, or a few other guys I could see being top 100 prospects, but it's, you know, after that, you can see the fall off in the system, especially as you get, you know, toward the back of the top 10. It's not as strong as it was, you know, a year, 2 years ago. But it's just more of a middle tier system, but still, you know, several guys you could see developing into, you know, average to above average big leaguers.
Yeah. Again, anytime a team drops from a top five farm system to, you know, middle tier, people kind of freak out a little bit. It's like, no, this is a good thing, because you'd rather have these guys in the majors helping you win 91 games and still kind of kicking around the farm system. It's okay. And it's just a matter of, okay, you know, they graduated, they've done everything right, trading some guys, and now it's just time to backfill it. But as you mentioned, there is still some potential impact talent in here. You mentioned Gabriel Moreno. The Blue Jays have had a couple of catching prospects who have been in the BA Top 100 in recent years, Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, the main two. Both of them have not quite established themselves as the Blue Jays' catcher of the future moving forward. Jansen has struggled at the plate. Kirk hasn't had a full season really yet, so it's hard to judge him fully right now. But at the same time, this is a position that if you're the Blue Jays, you have options, but you want a guy to step up. Reese McGuire, he actually had the most plate appearances of any Blue Jays catcher. Does Gabriel Moreno project to be better than Jansen and Kirk and be that guy who is the bona fide everyday big league starter? And what is it that separates him?
Yeah, the feedback on Moreno this year was pretty loud in terms of consistently loud praise from everybody who saw him this year. And not that he was on the field a lot, obviously. He missed a lot of the season with the broken thumb injury and had surgery, but he came back and played in the fall league. And again, there just everybody who sees him raves about him. I mean, I love Alejandro Kirk. Obviously I'm a big Alejandro Kirk fan. I'm a big believer in his bat, and I think he can, you know, be a really good big league player, but just all around talent. I expect Moreno to step in and seize that, you know, regular catching job for the Blue Jays. I mean, if it's offensively, defensively, just everything about him earned a lot of praise this year. It's a really good swing. He puts the bat to the ball a lot. It is an aggressive approach, but I think it became more selective this season. He's always had a really good knack for putting the bat to the ball, very good hand-eye coordination, and a good athlete, which I think has helped him make some adjustments too with his swing over the last few years. Whereas when he, you know, started his career, when the Blue Jays signed him, he was, you know, just content to put the ball in play. Didn't have a lot of strength behind his swing, but, you know, pitch would be in the zone or even out of the zone. He could put the bat to the ball and make contact. And now over time he's evolved his swing where he's got some more dynamic movements in there to be able to drive the ball with more impact, especially as he's gotten stronger and you're seeing him become just a more complete and more dangerous hitter. You know, I don't think he's going to be a 40 home run type guy. I think it's going to be more hit over power, but there is a balance of hitting ability and power there. And then defensively too, just everything was really positive about him. I think he's made significant progress with his blocking and his receiving. You know, he was getting pop times into the, you know, low 190s, even a touch below that at times. Did a really good job of controlling the running game. He's always been a really good athlete for a catcher. Again, I think that's something that's helped him out. And now he's just, you know, I think he's just one of the most, about as well-rounded of a catcher as you can hope for outside of an Adley Rutschman.
Yeah, one of the things that jumped out to me is, as we did our tool grades, after your discussions with evaluators both inside and outside the system and looking at some statistical analysis, you went ahead and put a 70 on his hit. And obviously 70 hitters are very, very rare in the major leagues, and they're very, very rare for catchers, specifically in the major leagues. At the same time, you look at his track record. He's hit 308 in his career in the minors. He just hit 367. A lot of that was in Double-A this year. Now, it was only 37 games. He suffered a broken thumb that required surgery, and he missed a lot of time. So seeing how he holds up over a full season and how he does facing the league second, third time, how they adjust and how he adjusts back, that is something that he still needs to prove, just because, again, he hasn't had the opportunity to show that yet in the upper levels. But at the same time, I mean, the track record is impressive. In the Arizona Fall League, went out, was one of the better players there across the board. I was there the last week, and he was struggling a little bit the last week, but the overall performance was still pretty impressive. It's just so hard to be a plus-plus hitter anyway, but especially as a catcher. What is it about him that separates him and gives him the ability to do that?
Yeah, I mean, look, he may end up not achieving that level, but I think the pure bat-to-ball skills that he has are extremely high. I mean, it's different than a Kirk-type hitter, but it's that innate feel for the barrel is there. He's got really good hand-eye coordination. It doesn't matter, you know, fastball, breaking ball. He can square up all different types of pitches. You know, if guys are, you know, guys are especially attacking now, just in general with, you know, fastballs with carry at the top of the zone. And I think he does a really good job of keeping his swing on plane to be able to make contact and do damage with those kind of pitches. And he's, you know, he uses the whole field. He's gotten stronger. So there's some more power now behind his swing that wasn't there earlier on in his career. So yeah, like you said, catching can take a toll on a player's body and offensive performance sometimes. So there's certainly some risk to him being a plus plus hitter, but I think he has the swing, the quickness in his swing, the bat to ball skills, and the strength to drive the ball with, you know, not plus power, but to drive the ball with some impact and do some damage to be one of the better hitters in the league.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'm going to be watching is when I was out there in the fall, like that final week of the season, it looked like the scouting report on him had gotten out a little bit, and he was chasing a lot of hard sliders down and away repeatedly. So I know for me, that's going to be something I'm going to be watching specifically next year. But at the same time, there's no question. This is a young hitter who's still developing, and you see all the tools. And if he just learns to lay off some of those, it's very, very easy to see him becoming, as you mentioned, an offensive force who's also a pretty good athlete behind the plate. And that's a rare commodity in today's game. Ben, Moreno was pretty clearly the number one prospect in the system. As you mentioned, mm-hmm. There's an argument he's one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. Nate Pearson at number two is someone who has ranked number one in the system before. No one has ever questioned his ability to throw a baseball very, very hard. He has struggled staying healthy. Some of it's been fluke injuries. Other times it's been injuries that are a little bit concerning. He showed the ability to consistently throw strikes at times in the minors. He has struggled to do that in the major leagues. You know, you go back a couple of years, if you said Nate Pearson's still going to be prospect eligible going into the 2022 season, that might have surprised a few people. But here is where we are. What are the current assessments of Nate Pearson, and what is his future at this point?
What is his future? That's a tough question, just because there's so many different ways it seems like he could go right now. It sucked this year because he just, again, more issues staying healthy, just staying on the field. You know, he had that one start back in May, I believe it was against the Astros, where he was just a mess. He was walking everybody, sent him down to AAA, missed a ton of time, just not being healthy. When he came back in September, they had him pitching in relief, and he was pretty good then. Still needs to improve his control, improve his command in particular. But he, like you said, has a power arm, was striking out a lot of players. It's pretty big stuff. I mean, up to 102, he's pretty regularly sitting mid 90s to 100 miles an hour. And his slider can be a plus pitch when he's on. But at this point, he's also, 25 years old. He'll be 26 by the end of the year. Next year, he does not have a track record that suggests any type of durability, some of which has been fluke stuff, some of which has not been. But how many, how much confidence do you have that he can handle that starter's workload at a big league level? That to me is the big risk factor with him, where he might end up being a reliever. But at the same time, if he does end up being a reliever, he has the stuff to be one of the best relievers in the game. So there's a lot of different ways he can go. And again, he still has to really dial in his command. This is not a 21-year-old, college pick we're talking about out of the draft, where we have time to, wait on some improvements with him. It's got to be there right now, right? So I think there's a lot of different ways he can go with a fair amount of upside, but also still a lot of risk and a lot of, it's frustrating that he's still in the prospect handbook, obviously still at this point.
Yeah, there's going to be an opportunity potentially. The Blue Jays rotation right now lines up Jose Berrios, Kevin Gausman, Hyunjin Ryu, Alek Manoah as the top four. And those guys have their spots locked in. Ross Stripling at the number five spot, he's definitely shown some good things. At other times, he's struggled and some of his limitations have shown up. So if Nate Pearson can stay healthy and go out and show some things he showed that made him at one point one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball and stay healthy, it's not completely crazy to see a scenario where he can come up next year and help in the rotation. And again, I think the fact that the Blue Jays don't need him to be a number one or two starter, if he just goes out and gives them five good innings and is a solid fifth starter, they'll be in great shape. At the same time, you can also see, hey, maybe the control doesn't come around, but you see the stuff. I mean, he's had some dominant outings in relief. I still think back to the 2020 wild card series against the Rays, where he went out in two innings, five punch outs, and it was absolutely lights out. You know what? If you compare that with Jordan Romano at the back of a very good bullpen, there's still a lot of value in that. So I think that there's definitely avenues for Nate Pearson to be a positive contributor to the Blue Jays. It's just a matter of what that avenue is. And to me, it's actually going to be one of the more interesting subplots of the Blue Jays 2022 season, just from a prospect's perspective, which direction Nate Pearson starts to go. Because I do think, as you mentioned, he'll be 26 this coming year. This is a point where you kind of want to get him on a track and say, this is what you can do to help the big league team, as opposed to kind of being stuck in the middle.
Yeah. It seems unusual to say for somebody who's, 25, that there is this wide range of outcomes. It seems like for him, usually we think about that with younger players who are at the lower levels, but with Pierce, and again, like 2020, it's not his fault. He didn't play in 2020. Some of the injuries have, been out of his control or just more flukish type of stuff, but it's a player with obviously a lot of talent, certainly in terms of just the raw stuff coming out of his arm, but the control and the durability are pretty big risk factors with him still.
So, Ben, as you were putting together this top 10, we mentioned Moreno's the clear-cut number one. Pearson, there's an interesting debate about him and what he's going to be. Was Pearson the clear-cut number two? And how did this next group of guys, this 3, 4, 5 and beyond group, line up behind Moreno?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, I don't know that Pearson was a clear-cut number two. Again, I don't know there's anything clear-cut with Pearson at all, just as like we've talked about, but I think you could certainly make a case for Orelvis Martinez being ahead of him. I mean, if you're really, really down on Pearson, like, if you see him as somebody who has no chance to start and you're really skeptical of him even developing the command to be a, an impact high leverage type reliever, you could argue Jordan Groshans ahead of him. I mean, Gunnar Hoglund. I'd probably have a harder time jumping over Pearson at this point. I mean, he has his own durability risks, obviously, coming off of Tommy John surgery, their first round pick out of Mississippi in 2021. So, you know, I think it was kind of a clear top. I would say maybe who belongs in that top five, six type guys. But I think you could argue, you know, the order of those guys in different ways.
Martinez is someone who was a very, very high profile international signing a few years ago. Got his way up to full season ball this year. Was really good at low A. He'll start a little bit at high, but that's not abnormal for young players in their first full seasons. But I actually want to hit on Jordan Groshans, because this is another player who pretty quickly was rising up into the ranks of the top 100 based off his pro debut. And since then, he's been sidelined by injuries and just hasn't quite been able to get untracked. What is his status now, and how is he seen by evaluators both inside and outside the Blue Jays organization?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of excitement about him after he signed that debut in the Gulf Coast League. And then when he went to the Midwest League, again, for a very brief stint, because he had that foot injury. So he really didn't play much after, I think it was after May that year. So, and then obviously 2020 was what it was. So he came in this year. The Blue Jays did push him pretty aggressively to Double-A. I was a little surprised they moved him that fast. I mean, this is not a guy with much experience at all at the, you know, at low A, and, you know, basically skipped high. So, so you're sending him to Double-A as a 21-year-old. You know, I think he held his own there. You saw some things to like, but I don't know. It's hard to find a scout who's like, oh, like, I love Jordan Groshans. Like, you just don't get that feedback from him, where you can find guys who feel that way about Orelvis Martinez. You know, with Groshans, he's, you know, he's played some shortstop. He's really going to be a third baseman long term. I think he, you know, he made some improvements defensively, as a strong arm, but it's, you know, his range and his actions are really better suited toward third base than shortstop, which is not a surprise. We've kind of always, you know, seen him that way. I think that's always been the consensus defensively on him. But offensively, I think what you want to see is just some more impact, driving the ball for more damage on contact, some more power with him that it seems like he was flashing earlier on in his career. He made some, you know, some adjustments with his swing. He had some bigger, more dynamic type, not out of control, but maybe sometimes actually out of control movements with his swing. So he kind of condensed those to a certain degree, and you still see a lot of contact with him, but you haven't seen the power that you would like to see from a player who's going to be a third baseman long term. So again, you see things that you like with his ability to square the ball up pretty consistently. He has a pretty good idea of the plate. He uses the whole field, but you do want to see more power from him to project him as an impact guy.
The big thing with him too is health. As you mentioned, really, really good debut in 2018. 2019 only got into 23 games before he suffered a foot injury that ended his season. Obviously didn't get a chance to play during 2020 with the canceled minor league season, although he was pretty good at the alternate training site. And even this year, he only played in 75 games. He missed some time earlier in the year with back soreness, and then he also was on the injured list for pretty much all of September. So getting him on the field consistently is a big part of that. He's another guy that I think that we've seen the talent, but staying on the field, putting it together for a full season, which is no small thing, is something we do need to see him do. And that is one thing that interests me a little bit. Interest might be the wrong word, but it's one thing that I do think is worth noting. As we talk about this top group, the Blue Jays, there's a lot of talent, but Moreno, again, was limited to 37 games this year. Pearson, we've talked about his injuries. Groshans has not had a chance to play more than 75 games in any season on his part. So we have a lot of guys who have flashed it, but showing they can do it over a full season They just haven't, in a lot of cases, had the chance to. And that's something to me that's just going to be worth watching, is how these guys maintain, because it's a different animal altogether doing it over a full season. And we just haven't had a chance to see it with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you're adding Gunnar Hoglund now into the into the mix. So it's even, you know, more guys who've had trouble staying on the field. But yeah, certainly the you can see it in the flashes when they are there.
All right, Ben, we're going to dive into the back of the system because there is some interesting depth here. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Hey, everyone. It's December. It's gift season. And I'm guessing that, like me, you might be struggling to figure out, what should I give for him and what about for her? Well, one thing you know is basically no one returns alcohol. So this year, get those people on your list the gift of beer, wine, and spirits delivered with Drizly in under 60 minutes. Drizly gets that delivery done in under 60 minutes. Right now, Drizly is giving every new customer $5 off their first order. Just use the promo code FAST5 at checkout. That's F-A-S-T number 5. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com and use the promo code FAST5 for $5 off your order. That's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery.
And we're back with Ben Badler breaking down the Blue Jays farm system. Ben, we've talked about the top of this system. Some familiar names, again, guys like Gabriel Moreno, Nate Pearson, who are top 100 guys currently, Rolfus Martinez and Jordan Groshans, who have made appearances in the top 100, Gunnar Hoglund, a first-round pick from a prominent college program. Once you get to the back of this list, though, you start getting into some guys who are more interesting, maybe lesser known, younger guys in the lower levels, or some guys who have had some ups and downs, newer draft picks. It's kind of an interesting collection of different types of players. Take us through this group and really how many guys were in the mixer? Because I feel like the top five were fairly clearly the top five. Of the 6 to 10 group, how many different guys were in the mix for these five spots? And ultimately, how did it kind of all shake out?
I think the 6 to 10, you know, again, you can argue different orders for some of those guys, but I thought the players who belonged there sort of separated themselves. Not because it's, all right, well, these guys are obvious, you know, all of them would be top 10 guys in any farm system, but maybe more just because it seems to drop off quite a bit after you get out of the top 10. I think there's some really interesting international players at the lower levels, guys like Esteban Machado, Semra Burst, when you go down even deeper into some of the guys who were in the, you know, the Dominican Summer League for them last year. Obviously, Manuel Beltre is the, the top guy from that group. So they have some interesting, players coming over from there. And you have some, guys who've been at the upper levels, like the Samad Taylor, Spencer Horowitz, guys who I think will play in the big leagues, but I'm not totally sure what type of role they're going to have if they're going to be everyday guys. So, they have a mix of those guys, but the line for where you can project guys comfortably developing into everyday regulars fell out, with the exception of some of the lower level guys like the Latin American players I mentioned, or an Irv Carter who they got out of the draft, or to be a back of the rotation starter or better, where, obviously those guys have a lot more upside, but a lot more risk. I thought it fell off, pretty comfortably after that group at the top 10 or so.
Yeah. Kevin Smith is an interesting guy. He was someone that came out and had a very, very loud pro debut, then really, really struggled, but kind of rebounded in 2021, made his major league debut. What do the Blue Jays have there? Realistically, what does he project to do for them moving forward?
Yeah, he was about as bad as it can get in 2019. It was just a nightmare, which is too bad because he, they drafted him out of Maryland in 2017 and everything looked pretty good in 2018. But after 2019, he's just striking out all the time and he was making all these swing adjustments and it didn't seem to help at all. If anything, it just seemed to make it worse. He was constantly tinkering with his swing. And then 2020, he was at the alternate site. And you know, it's hard to say exactly what happened there, but you know, just the reports out of there was like, yeah, like it wasn't much better than what we saw in 2019. But this past year was really a pleasant surprise. I didn't know what to, or I should say, I didn't have very high expectations going into it for him, but he had a really, really strong year. He made, again, some different adjustments this time with his swing, with his setup, with what he was doing with his hands. I think it led to some more quickness and more effectiveness with his swing. You know, at this point, long term, it's just been such an unusual career arc. I want to believe that what we saw in 2021 was a real Kevin Smith, but I'm not quite comfortable projecting him being this, you know, an everyday type guy yet at the big league level. I think there's obviously some upside for him to do that, but he's just been, you know, such an unusual career arc so far. You know, he's 25, turning 26 next year. He's got to step in and do it pretty quickly now. So, you know, I think there's a chance he can do that, and you know, he can handle shortstop comfortably too. Obviously, move around. He's, you know, I don't think he's going to do that in Toronto with Bo Bichette there. So he's probably going to have to, you know, move around the field a bit, or maybe move to a different organization to get that opportunity. So, you know, I'm still skeptical. He is that everyday guy, but I think there is a path for him to do that.
One of the more interesting guys at the back of this list is Ricky Tiedemann. I saw a lot of him when he was at Lakewood High School. A lot of teams liked him in the 2020 draft out of high school. Just his bonus demands with the shortened 5-round draft, no one was quite able to pull the trigger, but went back this year instead of going to San Diego State, went to a local junior college out here in Southern California, and really, really showed some promising things. The performance was uneven at times, but you saw the talent, you saw the ability, and was a 3rd-round pick this year by the Blue Jays. And he's interesting because he's very, very young. He's younger even than some of the players in this year's high school class, even though he was at junior college. Big physical lefty projection you can see coming just in terms of his stuff's going to tick up. But the general thought was it would take a few years just because he's very young. He's still growing. He's mostly been 88 to 92, 89, 92. Flash you an occasional 3 or 4, but again, it was good stuff now. He's going to grow into more in the future. It's a longer term projection play. Blue Jays took him and signed him, and he's coming out and he's throwing the upper 90s now, 94 to 98 in short bursts. And the velocity gains that they came isn't the surprise. People expected that, but it's that they came so quickly. And all of a sudden, there's a sense the Blue Jays might have gotten a steal here in the 3rd round. What were you hearing on Ricky Tiedemann, and what led to this kind of fulfilling of the projection happening quicker than anyone expected?
Yeah, like you said, the reports after he signed was 94-98. And I was like, are we talking about the same player? I was like, we're talking about Ricky Tiedemann, right? Like he's pretty consistently, you know, upper 80s to low 90s, topping at 94 in junior college. Right before the draft this year. What do you mean he's 94 to 98? So they're like, no, that's what we saw. And that's, you know, that's what he, our reports on him coming out of college were accurate. I mean, that's what he was. He just made this pretty quick and very significant jump in velocity of about 4 miles an hour of top end velocity after he signed. Now, sometimes I get a little scared when it's that fast of a jump in case it's some sort of, you know, mechanical change where a player is just generating more velocity but putting more stress on his elbow. So I hopefully that's not an issue with him. And obviously this, you know, the jump in velocity came in him throwing in, you know, in shorter stints, but it's, you know, we're seeing 98 now where we were seeing up to 94 before. It's a pretty significant jump. You know, inconsistent, you know, performance during the spring, But it's, you know, he's also, you know, he has a really good changeup, and he is a very, very good athlete too. So I could see him going out next season and being, you know, seeing him ranked toward the back of the top 10, looking very conservative too, right? Like it's hard to know how much to adjust for this newfound jump in velocity without any, you know, real performance in pro ball to go with it. Like how much to adjust where we would have him ranked because of it. So I think if he goes out next year, stays healthy, we could see him being one of the big risers up this list. Like if the draft happened again, if they redrafted again today, he's not going in the third round, I don't think. He's going higher than that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And again, that 94-98 was in shorter bursts, seeing what he's able to do over longer outings where he's throwing six innings and, you know, over the course of a long season can be a bit of a different animal. But just seeing those velocity gains materialize years ahead of expected is certainly an intriguing thing. Ben, who else was in the mix for this top 10 group? You said that there weren't too many guys where you felt comfortable projecting an everyday kind of role. But as you mentioned, even in the back of this top 10, there are guys who could end up being more of a reserve utility role. How many other guys were in the mix here for the top 10?
Man, maybe not necessarily top 10, but at least like maybe who I wanted to put number 11. Like there was a wide range of guys for that. I mean, the guy I kind of want to be the most aggressive on, but is hardest to justify, I think, at this point, is Steven Machado, who's a shortstop the Blue Jays signed out of Venezuela in 2019. I think he's one of the most exciting players from that class, but obviously he did not play in 2020. And then in 2021, he, you know, looked good before the season, but then the Florida Complex League started up and got one plate appearance and then didn't play the rest of the year just because he had, sounded like, some really bad hamstring issues with him. So it's hard to take a player who has one official plate appearance over 2 years since signing and be too aggressive with him. But you know, when he's healthy, I mean, you have a switch hitting, really athletic shortstop who consistently puts together good at bats, has a pretty good idea of the strike zone from what we have seen so far. It's a good swing, pretty good contact skills. There's bat speed to project more power, even though he's not the biggest guy, but runs well. I think he's got a pretty good chance to stay at shortstop. So there's a lot of things to like. I could see him jumping way up this list next year if he stays healthy, or I could see him going out and struggling and saying, oh, well, maybe it's, you know, not as, you know, maybe the bat is not as far along as we were thinking, and he sinks down this list. So it's hard to, you know, justify him maybe going ahead of a guy like, you know, like a Manuel Beltre, for, you know, another young Latin American shortstop in the system who has gone out and, you know, has, you know, some more recent performance, even though the performance was not that strong maybe for Beltre, at least on the surface. But you know, it'd be hard to justify, I think, running Machado too high up the list. But you know, then at the other end of the things, you have a guy like Samad Taylor who, you know, wasn't even protected on the 40-man roster after the season, and based on who the Blue Jays have on the 40 or did put on the 40-man and some of the other options they have, you know, I can understand why. But there's a lot of there are certain teams I think that are, you know, quite high on Samad Taylor. He's athletic. He can, you know, really, really run. He's a 70 runner. There's a lot of bat speed there. He made some adjustments to his swing where, you know, he's still striking out a lot. I think that's a big concern, but he did perform and the adjustments I think really helped him tap into power that you didn't see before. So, you know, I don't think he's really a shortstop long term. I think it's more, you know, second base, you know, play some center field, certainly the speed for that position. You know, could go to third, could move around the field, a versatile player, but somebody probably isn't going to be a shortstop, at least, you know, unless it's an emergency type thing most likely. So, some interesting guys, but I think it kind of falls off after that 10 where a lot of different ranges of or a lot of different players you could look at for that, you know, 11 to 15 or even 11 to 20 type of guys.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with Samad Taylor. At my previous job before BA hired me, he was in high school in my coverage area. So I remember watching Samad Taylor as a freshman at Corona Centennial High School, freshman second baseman. And then he eventually transferred and ended up at Corona High School by the time he was a senior. But it's crazy to me. I remember watching him, and he was a small, speedy second base middle infield type, smaller, skinnier guy, and put the ball on the ground and run. If you had told me he'd be hitting 16 home runs in the upper levels of the minor leagues, I would have been a little skeptical. Even look at his headshot now, it's like, wow, he really filled out. You just see it in his face and his shoulders, because he was, again, small, skinny, little middle infielder. And now seeing him have the success he is, especially on the power side, it's been cool to see. I'm not surprised by the stolen bases. I'm not surprised by the ability to put the bat on the ball, but I did not expect 16 homers out of him. So seeing him become what he's become is certainly interesting. Ben, thank you so much for breaking down the system for us today. Any final thoughts on where they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had a good plan in place to build through homegrown talent, and they've done that, and they've had a lot of graduations and used a lot of those prospects in trades too. And I think it's been a good plan, a good process, and good execution of that too. So it's, you know, the farm system I think now is more middle tier. It doesn't stand out to me as, you know, one of the best. It's not one of the worst, certainly by any means either. So there's still some potential impact guys there at the top. Is just more of a middle tier type system, which is exactly what you would expect at this point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see moving forward just how they kind of backfill it. And as we mentioned, we'll be watching them closely in the major leagues. They're one of the most exciting teams out there right now. Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your insight as always.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you, Kyle.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another edition of the BA Prospects Podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Ben Badler, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everybody.